Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to DragonCast. Home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond.
Hello, 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 how the devil are you? Welcome, welcome to DragonCast episode 13, if you kind of ignore the bonus episodes that we kind of decided to do, but then it's very complicated. We'll get it right for when season 2 of House of the Dragon starts. But it's me, Jamie East, your host, along with my co-host, the wonderful Chris Mandel. Chris, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. How's your week been? What have you been doing?
It's been good. Well, I've been coughing most of the week because I had a really bad cough on last week's recording. Oh, and no. I was trying very hard not to cough on the podcast. So if people thought I sounded a bit wheezy and lightheaded last week, you're right. And I suppressed it as much as I could. So I spent most of this week just coughing. And now, touch wood, it's sort of gone. And I'm afraid to say that is the only interesting thing that has happened to me since last week's episode.
You need those weeks to make the other ones count, don't you?
I think post House of the Dragon, I think everything is calming down. I think it's a lot less manic. And yeah, so it's all good. And what's your week been like?
What have I been doing this week? Not much really. I changed my setup a bit. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll notice new camera, new team, new dream, all of that. In the background, you can see my gorilla's car alight. Thank you very much, Paddy. That's Paddy's fault that I own that. long story. I got a new camera and a couple of new lights in the studio, but then within an hour of them arriving, everything in my studio was unplugged, and yeah. I got obsessed. I ended up watching YouTube tutorials on cable management, which was just like, I just went too far. I've got so many Velcro kind of like cable ties underneath this desk. It's yeah. ridiculous. It's holding the whole thing together. So that took like most of my week, and obviously lots of podcasting, lots of Smart 7. Interestingly, some people have discovered the Smart 7 off the back of DragonCast, which has been quite interesting. It's usually the other way around, but shows the mighty power of DragonCast. So
indeed.
The Smart 7 is the news podcast that I do every single day at 7 a.m. Apart from that, not much telly.
No.
I like The Jungle, so I watched The Jungle last night.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of The Jungle.
Matt Hancock.
It's not in yet, but yes.
Oh.
I fully predict the entire nation is going to hate vote that despicable prick, and quite rightly so, into every single task possible.
And sort of, I mean, I haven't watched it for years, but like, keep him in, right? Like, because it's not like Big Brother where it's a popularity contest. It's actually better.
Keep him in, make him sweat, make him suffer. Hopefully there'll be some like Bush Tucker trials where it's just like Nan's in a care home or something like that, that he has to kind of relive his, you know, relive his horror face to face. Aside from that, I started watching, interestingly, because we were discussing before we come on air how we're both desperate to watch The Americans, but we're saving it for the podcast. We'll talk about that in a bit. But I'd run out of things to watch, or rather I'd run out of enthusiasm for whatever it was I was watching anyway. Couldn't finish Industry. We'll talk about that.
No.
I'm sure you have opinions on that. So I actually started to watch Only Murders in the Building. Have you watched that?
Yeah. We got onto it really late. So we watched season 1 like a couple of months ago. Fucking brilliant. Like,
Yeah, it's just actually charming. Really, really easy to watch. Just charming, so charming. Nice and gentle. Yeah. And just the perfect length of episodes as well. I'm a real big fan of these American kind of, a bit like Schitt's Creek was only like 22 minutes long, yeah. Max.
This is a big problem in the streaming era, is no one has the tenacity to do a 30-minute episode anymore. And I think, like, when we sit down, we're like, look, we can't do 2 1-hour shows in an evening, right? Once we both get in, once we've had our dinner.
Once we've had dinner, exactly.
Once dinner, once you've done the washing up, you know. Need half an hour and an hour. That's the structure we like in the Mandel household. And it's hard. Only Murders went down a treat for that reason. Other reason, other thing fitting that mold is The Bear, which is on Disney Plus.
Oh.
I'm not like really obsessed with it, because when it came out in the States, everyone went bananas for it.
Are you one of them? I am a little bit, whereby if like everyone's telling me something's amazing, I'll be like, I shall be the fucking judge of that. Thank you very much.
I think it's, I think it's really interesting. I think there's a real zeitgeist with a lot of shows. And I think if you're late, you miss the the show unfolding in front of your eyes. So like what I get is everyone's told me this is the best show of the year, and I watch it and I'm like, it's trying quite hard to be the best show of the year, and that puts me off.
There's no discovery, is there anymore?
I'm enjoying it. So it's like 8 episodes, I think, and they're half an hour long. It's set in a sort of...
Have you got to the end? Have you not finished it yet?
No, we were going to watch the 7th episode last night, which is apparently the one that is all done in one take.
Now you see, I watched that and did not notice that at all.
Oh, really?
Well, which would be heartbreaking to the cinematographer, I'm sure. But like, I watched it and then read about it. I was like, was that only one take? I did not even like cross my mind.
Well, we were gonna watch it, and we just decided we were way too stressed. Well, not too stressed, but it would be way too stressful to watch.
It's a very stressy episode.
So instead, we watched an episode of The Sopranos, which was incredibly stressful. But I don't know. That's my comfort view. Can't say that.
Well, linking Sopranos, I started The White Lotus season two is out as well on Sky Atlantic HBO. Fantastic. I think I must have come to The White Lotus late for season one, because they were all there and I just binged through them and delighted in it over a period of like 2 nights or something like that. It's a weekly one, which
they're doing a weekly
feels
drop.
Kind of cruel after House of the Dragon. It really does. But very, very different kind of show. It's borderline art house, I think. It's like an art house whodunit, but done in a really nice way. And the casting, you know, after last season, I won't give any spoilers away. There had to be some major recasting. Like we said, we've discussed before, it's very clever how they've done it. The White Lotus Resort is just, this time it's in Sicily. Jennifer Coolidge is the only returning cast member back, but the casting is just so good. Aubrey Plaza, brilliant. So, so good. And there's a proper, in episode one, you'll know what I mean when you watch it. The dude who played the fella in Time Traveler's Wife,
Theo James,
is in it. Theo James. Who was pretty bland in The Time Traveler's Wife, but plays quite a horrible shit in The White Lotus. There's a great moment in episode one that involves what must be a prosthetic penis.
So I've not seen season two of The White Lotus yet, and I already...
Oh, but you just happened to catch that bit, did you?
The algorithm just thought,
right,
I know what you need to see.
Funny that, yeah. Funny
I've
that,
already
yeah.
seen the pictures. I mean, yeah.
Gotta be prosthetic, right?
I think it must be. I mean, it used to be that, like...
It would be, I would say, if that was real, an easy footer.
It's the size of one of those...
In the cold, like, in inclement weather as well, you know.
It's the size of one of those gummy snakes you get in Pick and Mix.
It just reminded me of Requiem for a Dream.
The thing is, right, like, I'm going to go really tinfoil hat here, and I do think, obviously, it's probably fake, but the kind of the way to get attention for men in shows now is to get your dick out, I think.
Yeah.
Like, because it's kind of the last taboo, kind of.
Alfie Allen, I think, broke that taboo quite
on
well.
Thrones,
didn't he? He loved getting his old tackle out in the old...
I'm also right in thinking, because I sort of... Oh, also there was... So who got their dick out on Succession? Someone... Oh, Roman had a dick pic on Succession. Do you remember?
That was it. Oh my God, yeah. How did we forget the dick pic? Oh, that's great.
But I think the rule is on television, you're allowed to show a penis if it's flaccid, but not if it's hard. That's, I think, the thing you can... Hard, it there's an intent.
Does that feel old-fashioned or okay?
I think knowing how long it takes to film episodes and get shots, I think asking for a penis to stay hard for a half a day would be too big.
Even in these days of Viagra, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's right. I think that's the sort of, that's why you see a flash of, I can't believe we're talking about this.
Just a little flash of a bell end.
Yeah, but you can't show an erection.
Hang on a sec, this just said, like, just intro. We've already done 15 minutes, mainly about dicks. This is what happens. Coming up, we've not even told people who we've got on this episode, and it's very, very exciting. Chris and I, late last week, recorded an interview with Sir Harold Westling himself, Mr. Graham McTavish, and he was fantastic. He was... slightly intimidating at first, as we mentioned, but he was like a little lovey, wasn't he?
He's quite sort of, just quite a strapping man, isn't he? I think he's great. I didn't say that to him on the interview. I was very professional.
No, you didn't.
He's a hunky Scottish man. I just love it. But did you not think this? I wouldn't have said this on the call. He's a lot more Scottish on House of the Dragon.
Yeah, when we were talking about him, he was talking about, he mentioned something about Edinburgh, you'll hear it in a minute. And I was like, wait, is he an Englishman playing a Scotsman?
Yeah.
Or is he a Scotsman now playing an Englishman?
I pulled up his Wikipedia during the recording to check, and he is Scottish, but he's just got a sort of lovely, you know, theatre voice.
Right, we're not going to give any more details about that away. That's coming up very, very shortly. We are also going to talk about us kickstarting the Americans as well. We're trying to work out how to do that. We didn't quite realise how many episodes there were of the Americans. Yeah. There are 75 episodes. This is not The Bear, for goodness sake. We've gone at the deep end. So we're not going to do an episode a week because, well, we would still be here.
A year and a half, nearly.
We wouldn't even get it done in time for House of the Dragon season 2. But first, let's pick up on any bits of House of the Dragon news. Pretty thin on the ground, I have to say, Chris. Everyone's kind of like hunkered down, hibernating, getting ready for Christmas. Graham gives us a few tidbits about where things are in the interview, which is coming up in a bit. But a couple of interesting things that I wanted to mention to you, Chris. And I don't know if you've noticed these. There's some really good pics of the season finale dragon fight, and it was one of the few times that they used volume technology. Now, do you know what I mean when I say volume technology?
Is this the 360 screen,
the big wraparound? Yeah. So I spoke to Miguel and Ryan, the premiere of House of the Dragon, because there was a whole thing, are they using volume technology? And actually they went, yeah, we did, but not that much. It's not as great as, you know, it's not the savior of CGI that everyone made out. You know, when Mandalorian came out, it was like, oh my God, they filmed the whole thing in this studio. And Miguel went quite geeky and beautifully geeky about telling me why you couldn't do it as much, because you had no depth of field. You have all this, you have the width around you of this big high definition plasma screen, whatever it is, but you've got no depth. So you can't move forward or backwards. You can only move sideways which I thought was kind of interesting. But in the fight between Aegon and Luke, they did use it. And there are some fantastic pics, which I'm going to put up on screen now. If you're looking at it watching this on YouTube, you'll see these up now, and they're just some really cool some pics there of them doing it. Chris, let me stick these in WhatsApp for you. So open up the chat bit. Hold on.
Yeah, put it in chat. Interestingly, though, about that technology, I noticed it was I'm fairly sure, I'm 90% sure it was used in episode 9 when Aemond and Sir Criston Cole find Aegon in that sort of that chapel.
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
Because if you look, the way that they chase him around that room, they never sort of get towards the door. Like, the door has a sort of flatness to it, and it's a huge room. You know, they tend to use this technology a lot when they need a, the grandness scale that they can't get on a set. So I'm fairly sure that that is done, because you see it's almost, there is an almost flatness to it. I mean, it's how you can reproduce the scale of something like that without shooting there. But it's very famous for The Mandalorian, isn't it? That was the show that...
That was the big one. They used it in all of the... I think they probably invented it for that show.
Because they could go to all these different like alien planets essentially without...
Yeah. And it does it. I mean, it clearly speeds up the process, which is why they churned out so much from Star Wars, I think. There's some great pics there of them on the gimbals, on the kind of hobby horse, but beautifully kind of like choreographed, coloured, and just like, I love, it's like, you know, in your heart of hearts that Luke is not flying 150 feet in the air in a thunderstorm, but to see basically a guy like holding a hose just like spraying him with water, it's just like, it's always just like brilliant. It's like, and it's all that's crazy. Missing is like a guy with a wobble board, like for the thunder. It's great. It's up on screen now.
It's really stunning.
And funny should mention about the use of the volume thing, because it's the other thing that I picked up on as well, and I'll put these on screen and I'll put a link in the show notes as well, is that there have been some thumbnails found from what was originally intended to be the final scene of season one. So we now know it as being one of the greatest scenes ever. And this is one of those beautiful, happy accidents of, you know, the one track shot of Matt Smith walking, of Damon walking in with his back to the camera, never turning around. And then, of course, Rhaenyra turns around with that look of fury in her face. Originally, that was supposed to be... that was supposed to take place in the throne room of Dragonstone, but they hadn't built it in time, or they didn't build weird, because A, they could have, surely they're going to need to build that at some point. B, why couldn't they have used that volume tech there? Maybe it didn't work.
See, but let
me put this in the chat for you as well, because
this is interesting. Rhaenyra doesn't have a throne yet, because in that episode, that is the episode where she decides, I am going to make a claim. So it's a bit like get the papier-mâché out, right? Like we need a war table, we need a throne. But yeah, that was, and so they went for this other thing at the war table, in that room where they go towards the fireplace and turn around.
And actually it was where, and if you look at there was the trailer for, in the trailer we saw Syrax coming out of the dark. And just that shot of him.
Oh, yes.
Which was never used in an episode. That was going to be the final ever shot in season one. So it was going to go. Takes place in the throne room. The thumbnails are this. Rhaenyra sat on the throne. She composes herself, looks to Daemon. Daemon looks down back at her. Then Rhaenyra looks at the camera in that same shot, that I think in the same style shot that we saw.
Yes,
but then the final shot was like showing the similarities between, you know, the connection between dragon and master, was that Syrax was going to come, that shot that we saw in the trailer, come out of the dark and roar into blackness, which would have been,
the dragon has been awoken now.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. And then instead they used that to have Syrax was sort of in there when Rhaenyra was going into labor. Is that the sort of,
that's right. Yeah. The same, they used that same connection thing, didn't they? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then there was another piece as well, which was that, I feel stupid for never having seen this before. And I think I'm going to say this to you and show this to you, and you're going to go, well, yeah, of course, everyone knew that.
Okay.
So hang on a second. Let me just, so if you're listening at home and you're not watching on YouTube, just type in to Google House of the Dragon, click on images, And the first image that comes up is the image used in IMDb, which is the like just one of the posters. Yeah, if you click on that, have you clicked on that, Chris?
Oh, I thought you were going to simulate. Sorry.
I'll send you the link. Hold on. All right. Mr. Lazy Pants. Hold on. I'll send you the link.
Lady Muck over here.
Yeah. Here you go. Here's the link. Now, I hope that I'm not going to be made to look stupid and go, Jamie, you're the last person on earth to see this.
So the first, the IMDb. So it's Rhaenyra and Alicent.
Yeah, top left.
Stood in front of the...
Click that. Do you notice anything in that? Does anything jump out at you?
Well, my mind is instantly saying that the eye of the dragon has the cat's paw dagger.
Oh, piss off. You knew it anyway.
I didn't know. I swear I did. Better. I swear I didn't.
You did know that, didn't you?
No. I've never...
Didn't you know that? Yeah.
No, I did not.
I'd never noticed that before either.
I've never noticed it before. I've never noticed it before.
Yeah. The pupil on the original kind of poster...
Great. That's really good.
Is the cat's paw dagger. I never, ever noticed that.
It's really clever because the prophecy and the sort of threat is what divides these women. Not only the existence of it, but who it refers to. They both have an Aegon. That's really clever. I cannot believe they have had that in front of us all this time.
I'd love to interview who made that poster. Should we try and find out?
I'd like really like to speak to the person who did the intro.
Oh yeah.
And there's really good. I mean, we were talking about it a lot week to week, but there are people that are on Twitter that will show you like, oh, here's what was new that week. Here's what's new that week. I think it's a very confusing intro, but I think
it is. Well, hang on a sec. Well, let's not say that in case we do get them on. They might listen.
In case they're listening.
I think it's a fantastic intro.
Probably better than the original.
Yeah.
Probably the best intro that's actually ever been designed. No, but I think confusing is fine. You know, listen, we've all got short attention spans in this day and age. But yeah, it's very complex and there's a lot. It'll only get more. There's going to be more and more every season and every episode there'll be development. So
yeah, what's going to happen? Yeah, well, let's not even think about that. Right, we are 100% waffling on now. Let's get to the good stuff, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be back with you in about 25 minutes time for a bit more chat and we'll talk about the Americans and whatnot after that. But first, here's Chris and I when we sat down with Sir Harold Westerling himself, Mr. Graham McTavish on Dragoncast. Tell you what, Chris, when Graham popped up on the screen then, did you just sit a bit straighter?
It's because Graham's got such a... the angle is so flattering, it makes him look 7 foot tall, and I suddenly felt like very small and emasculated.
Graham, you look hard as nails in House of the Dragon. You look like you're built like a brick shithouse, I have to say. You look incredible.
He's a formidable individual, Sir Harold Weston. I mean, all he's doing when he's not guarding the king is press-ups and you know, bench-pressing, you know, other members of the court. That's how he passes his time. I've decided that Harold doesn't actually sleep either.
They have they're on flexi time for sure, right? They are just at the beck and call, right?
Oh, completely. No. I mean, well, as you probably noticed, I never sat down throughout the entire series. And this only dawned on me. I remember when we went into the small council chamber for the first time. You know, we all arrived, and I'm on the small council, Sir Harold. And I looked around, and there was one chair missing. And I said to the director at the time, I can't remember which one he was, I said, I'm so sorry, where's Harold's chair? He said, oh, no, Harold doesn't have a chair, he stands. I said, well, like always? Yes. But can't you sit down occasionally? And no, I was never allowed to sit down. And so I don't think he actually has a bed. I think
is that like a rule of the King's Guard then, I presume?
Because yeah, I think he just goes into his room and just leans against the wall and quietly cries himself to sleep.
A bit like cows when like so people creep up at night and just push you over like they do like people do in the provinces with cows. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Sorry, we've not even introduced ourselves. Welcome, Graham. Welcome to Dragoncast. I'm Jamie, and this is Chris, who might keep dropping out because his internet connection takes away the picture every now and then, but he's still here. How are you doing? Whereabouts are you? You're in LA, right?
No, I'm in London.
Oh, you're back in London. Lovely stuff.
Back in London. Yes.
And talk to us. We were just chatting before you joined us about what we wanted to know. And before we get on to the intricacies of Sir Westerling, what's it like as Graham McTavish at the moment in between seasons? We're kind of like presuming that even though you've quit and flounced off in a huff, the cape is just being dry cleaned and we'll be coming back to you one day. What's it like in between seasons for a principal cast member?
Yeah, well,
do you have enough time to go and like do other jobs? Are you limited to what you're allowed to do? How does that work?
No, yes, I do have time. I've been doing other things and they're actually really good nowadays, these guys about that sort of thing. They understand that, you know, hey, you like to act, so you like to work. So that's what I enjoy. I get very fidgety if I'm not working. I get very sort of frustrated. I'm writing at the moment as well. I'm writing another book with Sam Hewan about our trip to New Zealand.
It's like a travelogue kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a kind of travel / history thing.
Fab.
And so I'm busy doing that right now. But I don't like being idle. It's very, it's kind of annoying actually sometimes. I find it very difficult to relax. My fiance is constantly complaining that I'm always trying to do too much at one time. So, but you know, my body gets a bit of a rest from being sort of encased in armor for a start.
Yeah. Is it latex? Is it proper armor? I know that Jamie Lannister had a rubber hand for a lot of his scenes back in Thrones. It was like a little flop. I went to visited the prop store over in Titanic Studios and saw it there in its perspex case, right, never to be. And they passed it to me, and I was expecting it to be heavy. It was just like a rubber glove. Just flopped around.
Rubber glass. Very disappointing. Well, no, it wasn't steel armor. And it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't that the weight, and actually I have to applaud the costume department, and the armory department, because they were brilliant, with that stuff. It's not the weight. It's just that it's very unyielding. So, right. There's a tendency for it to just start to like dig into parts of your body that you didn't know existed. And we spoke to them early on. Kristen Cole, Mr. Frankel, was quite vocal in his sort of pain that he was feeling. I mean, obviously, having done The Hobbit.
These kids, kids.
I mean, I said to him, listen, mate, try and wear a 70-pound costume and then complain. But, you know, he was like, So they worked on weight distribution and everything, and they had a little detachable bit at the front so that we could sit down without looking like turtles. And actually eat food. So they were very, very accommodating. So it wasn't nearly as uncomfortable as it looked. But they did an amazing job. And the helmet, when I had to wear the helmet, very comfy indeed. So no complaints. The sword was pretty heavy. And I did have the biggest sword, I'm just saying.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Nice. Good.
Yes, Dark Sister was a pale imitation of my gigantic blade. So we used to have a great laugh, actually, me and Matt on set. Dark Sister. I mean, it's a great name. I'm not knocking the name. It's a great name for a sword. But whenever he used to come on set, I would say, it's Dark Sister. And then we would come up with names for our swords. I can't remember what Paddy's was. It was absolutely hilarious, though.
Amazing.
Paddy was one of the funniest people on set.
He's wonderful. So he came on. He came in and spoke to us a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Did he?
Absolute blinding guy. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
Dark great. Sister does. Dark Sister does sound very kind of 70s prog.
I think they should always.
It's like a band. Ladies and gentlemen, Dark Sister. And then you can just hear that the boom, 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 boom coming up. Yeah. Lots of head shaking. And,
yeah.
Thanks.
Chris.
Oh, sorry. I don't know why my camera goes off and on. So, Graham, one thing we were talking about when we've been watching the show every week is that because your character is so studious and he's this good principal character, we don't know a lot about him because he's always at work. So when you kind of got the brief, when you were told you're playing him, what can you tell us about what you know about Harold that maybe we don't? I mean, has he been in the Kingsguard a long time? Is he like an army bro? Like, what's the story there?
Well, I mean, the discussion that Ryan Condal and I had before we started filming was that the Kingsguard is almost like a kind of warrior monk sort of brotherhood. So you get chosen to be in the Kingsguard, and it's an enormous honor. But what goes with that is a lot of sacrifice. So as far as I understood, and this was how I played it, he'd basically been in the Kingsguard as an apprentice, probably since he was a teenager. He would have literally been devoting his entire life to that family. I think Harold, well, he definitely served the previous king and possibly even the king before. Yeah. And he's also one of the few that's had actual experience of war.
Yeah.
That we decided. So he has a background in proper warrior stuff, you know, badass going in there, beating the crap out of people, sort of a guy. But people who have that with them are always anticipating the next war. It's like if you've never experienced war, you never imagine it could ever happen. But I think if you have, you just think it's only a matter of time before it kicks off again. So he has that running through him. They forsake family.
Land, I think, right? Titles.
But there was the moment, wasn't there, where it was either Eric or Derek, I forget, that where they passed the crown to Rhaenyra in the finale, where the vows that he kind of spoke when he was on his knees handing the crown were very similar to the Knights of the Watch.
Yeah.
In Thrones, where it's you're forsaking everything and doing your duty. You get the better deal because you get to at least kind of like walk around in a cloak in the hot sun, and the Night's Watch just kind of basically just stand by a wall for hundreds of years and freeze your nuts off.
Yes.
It was interesting. Yes. You mentioned the inevitability of war, because, you know, I mean, luckily as a viewer, we all know the Dance of the Dragons is coming, and we always did know that there was always going to be a war. Mm. Do you think that everybody in the Small Council just knew there was a war, and they were just putting it off as long as they could? Even Viserys kind of like was doing his best, but it was, you know, it's a bit like bailing out the Titanic with a thimble, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there are lots of agendas at play with shows like this. And that there will be people who will be working very hard to avoid war, you know, not discounting the possibility that it may occur. And then there are people who are positively hopeful for war for their own rather nefarious purposes, Otto being that kind of an individual. Whereas, you know, the character that Bill Patterson played was, you know, very, very much about, you know, trying to avoid any upset, keeping things on an even keel, just playing the safe hand, being calm, being very, very sort of Scots, actually. Well, that kind of Edinburgh Scot, who it's all about just let's just make sure the finances and this and that are all fine.
Yeah.
But with regards to the war, I don't think they're warmongers in the Small Council. Possibly, maybe Otto, but it's not that Otto wants war particularly. He just wants to realize his own ambitions for his family. And if that involves war, then fine. He's not going to flinch. And also I think, you know, nature abhors a vacuum, and they've been living in peace for so long. And and this is something that we can all relate to. I mean, even today, that amongst some people, there seems to be an almost perverse desire for war. They actually can't wait to sort of like start bombing each other. And I think there's an element of that in the small council, that there are those that are barely held on the leash, really. And, you know, I think significantly, somebody like Harold Westerling, as I say, who has experienced war, unlike these guys, wants to try and avoid it as much as possible. But when push comes to shove, those are the very kind of people you want leading you into battle.
We've kind of asked a couple of people who've been on the show to tell us if there's been anything that they worked on that got cut for whatever reasons, because obviously you film more than is able to fit in the episode. Were there any scenes that you did with other characters that didn't make it into the episodes? Could you tell us a bit about that?
No, I don't think so. There was, in the scene where in that penultimate episode where I take the cloak off and all the rest of it, there was a little more with Kristen.
Right.
So there was more... There was more of a real confrontation, you know. I pushed it, you know, in terms of dialogue wise. Harold really laid it out that basically you're scum. I think the line was one of the lines was the rats of the Red Keep have more honor than you, and really it was the culmination of everything that he bottled up. Up till that point, all the things that he'd understood finally about Kristen, and he wanted to tell them. And of course, as an actor, you know, you want that to be in the show because it's a great, cool moment.
It's the showreel. But yeah, exactly.
At the same time, actually, I understand why it's not in there, because if he had said those things to Kristen, I think it would have escalated.
Yeah.
I don't think Kristen, being the kind of hair trigger kind of a guy that he is, would have put up with basically being told that he was utter scum. And I think that would have, you would have suddenly had a sword fight. Yeah. Whereas Alison's interjection at the point that it comes in actually made more sense. And the way it plays in the scene, you can see that both Kristen and I are quite happy to have a fight if necessary, but, you know, cooler heads prevail. Mm. And that's when, you know, we sheathe our swords. But, that was an interesting bit that we didn't include in the end.
Are you up to speed on the books? Do you know what the outcome of, do you know what Sir Harold's fate is at all?
No, I don't.
Not that we're going to discuss it.
No, I just wondered if... No. Well, I mean, I think my understanding anyway is that Harold...
Don't spoil it for me. I don't want... Don't you dare spoil it for me.
No. I mean in the books. I won't say anything.
No, we can't. I don't even want to know what happens in the books. Oh, goodness me.
Fair enough.
I only say that because you mentioned about the rats, and we picked up on the rats as this kind of motif that seemed to be being planted throughout the...
There's a lot of, particularly when Viserys was getting iller and iller, there was a lot of shots of rats around his room.
Well, the thing is, I heard that there is like a red wedding-y kind of moment.
Really?
However many seasons time the rats eating the blood is like a major kind of foreshadowing of some nice. Huge kind of twist shock kind of thing that's coming your way. So
nice.
What I'm saying to you, Graham, is watch out for the rats, mate, because
I see one scurrying around.
You're always standing up, so you'll be first out the door, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he's not so stupid after all. Yeah.
I was just going to say really quickly, it's really impressive to see Harold quit on principle, because that episode where he does quit is where we see that very few people in that room have any principles and they are willing to usurp the throne. It's amazing that he identifies that Rhaenyra is the rightful heir and chooses to get out. I mean, do you understand whether he's going to be finding Rhaenyra, or is, do you think he's going to be rallying support, or is that kind of speculation stuff that you don't really bother engaging with until you're on set?
It's difficult to speculate about that. I mean, I think what I loved about that was that it was, you're absolutely right, that really he exists in a nest of vipers, Harold. You know, these are backstabbing, you know, venal, yeah, sort of ambitious, whatever you want to call them, individuals. And, you know, they've all got their own agendas, whereas Harold really doesn't have an agenda. And I think that's very important from a story point of view, that if it's just about one sort of morally dubious character after another, it's important to actually anchor that kind of a world and have at least one person representing, you know, moral dignity and honour. The very fact that he does take his cloak off and walks away, he wouldn't have... I mean, I take a moment to do it in the show, because it's a big deal, and surrendering a cloak would have been enormously painful for him. But I don't think mentally he would have hesitated for a minute, that there was no choice as far as he was concerned. This was a line that they had crossed that was completely, you know, unpardonable. And he couldn't, in good conscience, be a part of it. My goodness me, I mean, even, you know, nowadays it's difficult enough to find people of honour in political life and public life. But in this show, you know, he does represent somebody who is a straight arrow, somebody with a strong moral compass, and somebody who cares about people, about the people that he has been entrusted to serve. And that's, it's quite an old fashioned concept, you know, that a life of service, you know, somebody who's represented it recently, of course, is our late queen, you know, who devoted her life to a nation and to a commonwealth. And that's such an unusual thing. I'm not comparing myself with the queen, but, he's,
well, I think you are, it's fine. That's tradition. Fine. You are. Yeah.
He's somebody from that tradition that actually believes in right and wrong and standing up for his principles, which is fabulous.
That's always the rule in George's world, is always look for the there will always be someone trying to help. And, you know, there's that saying, is there, in times of a crisis, there will always be someone there trying to help, running in the opposite direction.
Yeah,
and
right.
So Harold is that guy, and he's the only guy there at the moment that is seemingly trying to do that, or someone in King's Landing that's trying to do that. Do you, I mean, not that we would ask you to divulge anything, but have you been in touch about season two? Is it on the horizon? Are you limbering up? Are you starting to kind of like
bench pressing,
bench pressing, prepping yourself for the aluminium armor again?
I'm always ready. I mean, I can't like talk really anything about, you know, season two or whatever, but, you know, I'm having dinner with Ryan soon, and I'm sure we'll have a lovely chat. But it's so difficult nowadays in the world that we live in television. That
is it what you expected it? You know, because obviously Game of Thrones now comes with a whole lot of baggage and expectation, and you must have had that in the back of your mind when you accepted the gig. Is it how you imagined it to be?
Yeah, I've had a bit of practice with The Hobbit and.
Exactly. You know,
with Outlander, particularly those that there is a big kind of fan expectation, there's a big fan involvement in that world, but it still takes you by surprise. It does. You know, people have come up to me to talk about the show and talk about Harold and the world of House of the Dragon, and I saw an amazing video. I think it was on the premiere evening, the premiere night. And it was in an apartment building. You may have seen it in New York. And you could see in
the room. With all the lights.
Everybody was watching the show.
Amazing.
And that really does bring home, because you can't conceive of that. And it's a good thing you can't. because I mean, you'd never step out of your door to work if you felt that kind of pressure. So, you know, in terms of shows like this, and it was the same with The Hobbit, the same with Outlander and all the rest of it, you're working very much, not just in the moment, but you're working in a little bit of a bubble. And the business end of making shows like this is very, very, very small. So, you know, you'd literally be, you know, me, Reese, Matt, Paddy, you know, there's groups of people talking to each other as actors or interacting with a very small number of people around them. And so you've got the sets and the costumes and all the rest of it, but that almost fades into the background, actually, because really what you're concentrating on is what's happening right in front of your face. And that's definitely how it should be. You mustn't walk onto a set like House of the Dragon thinking, oh no, they're all waiting. Will they like what I'm going to do? Should I be standing like this? Should I have the helmet on? Should I take it off?
In my kind of like, oh no, I've walked into school assembly naked nightmares that I have. I am walking into the throne room and to do some acting and kind of thinking, holy shit, I'm going to be dreadful.
Believe me, all actors have those nightmares.
Is there anyone in the wider cast that you haven't got to work with as much that you're looking forward to working with? Whether it's next year, season three, whatever, anyone that you just weren't able to play against that you'd like to see more of next year?
Oh, gosh. Well, the new Aegon, I mean, I had nothing to do with the older version. In fact, the older version of the cast, apart from Rhaenyra and Alicent, I didn't really have any interaction with at all. So there was a real separation. Who else? I mean, I'd like to do more with people, you know, the other families that aren't necessarily. I mean, I think that's one of the interesting things about this, you know, whatever happens next, the world of House of the Dragon is going to expand.
Yeah.
And it's almost going to be a little more like the original show, in that I think there will be multiple storylines, multiple locations happening.
Yeah.
I think that seems to be definitely where it's leading, because we're going into a kind of civil war.
I was surprised. I would be surprised if you hadn't been asked to be in the original Thrones. Did you have any conversations around that initially? Were you approached with any parts?
In the original? Well, yeah, the problem there was that I was never available. So I was doing The Hobbit when it began.
Right.
I think. Yeah, I was doing The Hobbit. And then I went straight on to Outlander for another 2.5 years. And then I went straight from that to Preacher for 4 years. Yeah. And it just, it really kind of covered that period pretty much. And so no, sadly, I was always hoping that it could work out. But the lovely thing was that the conversation I had with Ryan, I had, gosh, it's got to be at least 5 years ago about this.
Wow.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Well, he was, I did a pilot with Ryan for a show called The Sixth Gun, which was based on a series of comics for NBC. And that didn't get picked up, but Ryan and I stayed friends. And I subsequently worked with Ryan on Colony, which was another show that he was showrunner on. So he likes working with me. And we met for lunch in LA. And he explained to me and he'd become friends with George when we were in Santa Fe during The Sixth Gun. He'd sought him out, really, and sort of gone, because he's a huge fan, Ryan.
Amazing.
And that set in motion his ambition to actually write the prequel to it. And I know at one time there were a couple of other possibilities, but I think Ryan's was always the strongest. And I know George really supported Ryan's vision. And Ryan spoke to me about it at lunch 5 years ago, probably, and said, you know, when this happens, I'd really like you to be involved in it. And I was like,
Yes, please.
And I remember standing with him in the throne room, I think the first time we shot on that set, And we were looking up at these giant statues and looking at the Iron Throne. And I just said, can you believe it? This has actually happened.
It actually worked.
Yeah. That something that you imagined in your head that you wanted to accomplish has now come to fruition. And here we are standing together. I'm in a suit of armour. Off we go. And it was an amazing moment. I remind him of it whenever I speak to him, actually.
Especially in TV land, the amount of, you know, the amount of pilot graveyard that we live in.
No, right? it's a fantastic success story.
You know, and that it most certainly is, because, you know, as Chris and I have said to everyone we've met from the show, what a relief, what a joy, what a fantastic thing. We cannot wait to see what you guys have got lined up for us over the coming years.
Brilliant.
Graham, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on.
Good luck with season two,
whatever the future may hold.
Rooting for you in season two.
All right, buddy.
And we'll be right back after a word from our generic sponsors.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to Dragoncast, episode 13. It was wonderful. Thank you so much to HBO, to Premiere, and everybody for putting us in touch with Graham. Hopefully not the last cast member that we speak to between now and season two, but they're all taking a well-earned break, or as Graham pointed out, enjoying working on something else.
Yes. Washing their hair after gluing those wigs in for so long. Do you know who I'd love actually to speak to either in the interim or for season two? Is the guy that plays the twin Lannisters. One of them is on the small council. You know, the guy that was like chirps in on Rhaenyra on like the boar hunt.
Oh, yeah.
So he plays two Lannisters, but he was also in... I didn't know that. Yeah.
Well, as in like a bit like Armie Hammer did.
Yeah. He's doing a Winklevoss. Oh. So the Lannister that's in the small council and the one that was trying to marry Rhaenyra are brothers.
Right.
I don't think they really make it clear, but one of them is the heir to Casterly Rock and one of them is like the master of coin or whatever. Not obviously they're played by the same actor. What is even more amazing is that guy was in Game of Thrones in season one.
Yes.
We think we talked about it at the time. The only time they just went, yeah, you know, you can come back and play someone else.
Mate, they didn't notice.
Really?
He knew. And he was, honestly, this is the truth. This is the truth as I understand it, that has been told to me, was that he knew, kept his head down. No one checked. Just, can you imagine, like, standing on set? I'd be shitting myself, like, any minute now. It'd be like the end of Argo every single day.
So he's played by Jefferson Hall. If you're listening, Jefferson, come on the podcast. Tell us how you pulled off the scam of the century.
Now, let's talk about the results of the season one poll, shall we? We are going to be recovering old ground in terms of Game of Thrones. We're not going to do an episode by episode watch back because life's too short. You know, it's cost of living crisis, mate. But what we are going to do is go back and look at three key episodes for each season of Game of Thrones. And I think we'll do one each week. So this week, let me see. I've not even checked the results. Did you vote yourself, Chris?
I did. I voted straight away. And I might have taken a peek at the answers this morning.
Well, the results are in. Okay. In reverse order. Wow. No one liked episode 5 much. The Wolf and the Lion, that came last. Then it was episode 2, The King's Road. Then we had episode 3, Lord Snow. That was just a lot of faffing around at the wall, I think.
A lot of establishing new characters.
That was when Benjen went missing, wasn't it?
I think so, maybe. Yeah.
And then we had The Pointy End. Again, nothing jumps out at me in terms of that. Then, surprisingly, came episode 10, Fire and Blood. So way off the mark. Then we had joint 4th and 5th is episode 6, A Golden Crown, and episode 7, You Win or You Die. So the three that we're going to cover, kind of not, I think, so are we doing them in chronological order or vote order?
We'll have to, I think probably chronological order. Chronologically, because stuff in later ones will be informed by what we've seen.
Yeah. So, episode 1, Winter is Coming, even though we discussed why we didn't want to do the pilot episode. That's what we're doing, the pilot episode. That's the first one. That got 38% of the votes. Then episode 4, Cripples, Bastards, what's the full title?
Cripples, Bastards and Broken Things.
That was it, yeah. I can't remember what happens in that one off the top of my head.
Well, it culminates with Catelyn Stark arresting Tyrion. In the crossroads, she thinks he attacked Bran, and it is interesting in that regard because that is what the misunderstanding kicks off the whole war.
Yeah,
and it is a misunderstanding involving that bloody knife because that's
the cat's paw dagger yet again.
Yeah,
I may have to get a picture of the cat's paw dagger somewhere. It's become like a MacGuffin of modern cinema, and then. To nobody's surprise, including our own, episode 9, Baelor, will be the final one that we discuss from season 1. So next week, Chris, are we going to do a watch along or are we just going to discuss it? What do you feel
great
like?
Great idea. I think we should watch them in our own time, and I think we should do a Twitter Spaces with people that are listeners to see if they want to like share their thoughts.
So that'll come up as a bonus episode within the next week or so. We're still trying to get into a groove of...
Yeah, very interesting results on the poll. So we've got the first episode of the season, the last episode of the season, and then we've got episode 4.
No, we haven't got the last episode of the season.
Sorry. We've got the first episode of the season, we've got episode 9, where Ned loses his head, and then in between that we've got episode 4, which I don't remember being a particularly like fast-paced episode, but you know, I also think I just want to give a shout out to the second episode of season 1, which is the one with all the drama where Arya's wolf bites Joffrey, and then they kill Sansa's wolf as a sort of penance. And I think it's a very good episode. Yeah. I think we talked about this last week, but pilots are really hard work. But often with most shows, the second episode is where you get, okay, we've set all this up. We're going to like have some fun. And episode 2 is a great episode of just seeing how fucked up the politics are, the sacrifices that everyone is going to have to make, and all the foreshadowing about how toxic this whole setup is. So if people are doing a rewatch for the whole season and you see episode 2, let us know, because I think it's great. But we'll do 1, 4, 9, which I think is a really good intro
to Joffrey as well. Episode 2 is really good.
Also, I think, looking at the pilot, looking at the first episode, seeing everything, I think it'll be kind of really interesting because you don't have this with House of the Dragon, but Game of Thrones has three completely unrelated storylines for most of its run. Like you have the fighting with all the families, the stuff north of the wall, which for most of the show feels completely irrelevant. And you also have Daenerys, who doesn't meet any of the other cast for quite a long time. So that's a lot for a pilot when you think House of the Dragon has been quite streamlined and it's been quite, this is what it's about. Really looking forward to that. So we'll do episode 1 next week.
Next week. Perfect. Can't wait. And then separately, we're doing this, right. I tell you, I'm going to defer to my podcast wife, Chris Mandel. what are we? It's weird how I've assumed the husband position there. Are you okay with that?
Absolutely fine. Just keep me sweet, and yeah, I'll have your dinner on the table at 6.
Fine, thank you very much. Explain to me and the listeners how we're going to tackle the Americans.
Okay.
It all of a sudden feels a lot more daunting than I was expecting it to.
Yes, yes. So, it's
right. Talk us through it. Are we doing this as bonus episodes?
I think probably that's a good question. Well, let's just do. I feel like Carol Vorderman on Countdown with my big marker pen. Let's just break this down. So we're going to do 3 episodes a season of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So there are 8 seasons. 3 times 8 is 24.
Okay. Well done. Thank you. Good maths.
I have a GCSE in maths and I'm not afraid to use it. So we've got 24 episodes. Maybe we don't need 3 episodes of season 7 and 8 because those are shorter. So then that's going to take us through to, I mean, that's going to take quite a while. I think the Americans we should do as a bonus thing. And we should run a similar sort of structure, but the Americans is 6 seasons for a total of 75 episodes. So we can't really do it episode by episode because it will take a year. So what I think we should do, and look, we're all getting older.
Some older than others.
But you've got this new HD camera, and I would argue you look younger than me in that flattering light. So what I think for the Americans, we should do a similar sort of structure. I think we should watch all of it, but I think we should cover it in 3 like chunks. We should do it a third at a time. So we'll do 3 episodes per season. That's 18 episodes total.
We will watch
episode 1 to 4, discuss them. We'll watch 5 to 8, discuss them. 9 and 10, and then a reflection. I think that is a good way to do it because we have other commitments outside of the podcast. And also, we don't really know what we're getting ourselves in for.
Exactly. And you know what? I don't think we will, because I think we've chosen wisely. We might not even like it, but let's see how we go.
Imagine if we started it and we were like, what a load of shit. It's interesting though. I think, you know, shows take a long time to get into. And I think I remember finding Mad Men quite painful to watch at first because I was really late to Mad Men. And I now think it's one of the best shows ever made. I think it takes a minute. So, yeah, that'll be helpful. We'll watch 4, we'll reflect on it. And that's the way we'll go.
Great, because I can't wait to start watching it. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too. So that's going to be really excited for the Thrones rewatch as well. And then we have Succession in the spring, so we're going to be very busy.
Oh, there we are. But you know what? It's not work, is it? It's not work, is it?
No. Well, according to the tax man,
this is a proper treat.
According to the tax man, it is work. And if he is listening, hello.
HD camera is expensive.
But yeah, I mean, what a fun thing to do. What a great thing to do. And we've had so many nice messages from our listeners this last week. Just checking in.
We've had loads. In fact, we got a few emails through. Thank you to Carla Pappas, who I think from... I think they're Portuguese, saying, you guys should visit our little towns of Monsanto and Pena Garcia in Portugal. Episode 10 of House of Dragon was shot there, and it's beautiful. So there we go. Another one to add on our worldwide.
I wonder which part of episode 10.
Yeah, which part of that? Were there any external shots that were kind of sunny? I don't think there were there? Maybe.
I thought all the Dragonstone stuff was done in Cornwall.
Yeah, maybe. What about what about the Baratheon? Place. Maybe that
would make sense.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Claire got in touch. Thank you, Claire, saying it'd be good for you to rewatch House of Dragons episode by episode and redigest with hindsight. Thanks for the email. Absolutely not.
Well, I think yes.
I think what we may do is do a bit of a recap building into season 2. Mm. I think would be probably the best way of doing that.
Yeah, I'd be in, I'm definitely interested. I mean, it's funny because we just through the course of our jobs and other commitments, I mean, I think I've watched every episode two or three times. I'm a bit like done in. But
yeah, I've kind of already done. Yeah,
you know, what's interesting with Thrones, I think I watched sort of at least the first two thirds of it. I must have watched it four or five times. I was always rewatching it because it was always on Sky at like 11 p.m. And if ever I was like back up seeing my parents, I'd just watch a couple of episodes. And I would always, yeah.
It's just on.
It's always on. It's literally on, probably on tonight on Sky Atlantic.
I will be.
Like two episodes from season three. And yeah, I've watched Game of Thrones a lot just through sheer force of will. And maybe the same will be true of House of the Dragon. Maybe late next year we might end up doing a little mini cluster of episodes. Yeah. Intriguing.
That would be good. That would be good. Listen, Chris. It's been an absolute pleasure again, my friend.
Always.
See you next week when we've got when we've watched episode one of Game of Thrones and four episodes of The Americans. Amazing.
What a lot of work to do. So we'll put something on our Twitter, which is just what time we'll do a Twitter space to talk about the Game of Thrones premiere.
100%.
And, yeah.
Lovely stuff.
Well, have a good week.
Yeah, you too. Have a good week. Thank you very much for listening or watching. If you're on YouTube, don't forget to spread the Dragoncast love and tell your friends about it and like-minded people. If anyone has been annoying you to watch The Americans and you want to jump on board with us, we would love to have you along for the ride. And do join us on Twitter Spaces for our talk through of season one, episode one of Game of Thrones. Until next week, you've been listening to Dragoncast. I'm Jamie East and this is Chris Mandel. Dracarys. If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for Dragoncast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside is very much appreciated. Dragoncast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel and is a Daft Doris production. Dracarys.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.